Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. I'm Genuinely Grace, as you will no doubt hear from my voice. I've got a really bad cold, and it's actually a cold. Do you remember those? I haven't had a cold in like 2 years, but it is a cold. And I'm just having to kind of remember all the stuff I used to do, you know, steaming your head and getting tea tree oil and and all of that stuff. But anyway, apologies, because I do sound quite sniffly, but I'm completely fine. I've had the most amazing week before the cold came on. I was reattending a practitioner course that I did a good few years ago, and it was so interesting to reattend something that I'd done when I was still drinking. Oh my goodness, the difference it made. I mean, number one, I took so much more in. It made so much more sense. I felt so much more present. And I remembered the last time I'd been on the course at the same venue in Brighton. I remember that I would leave the course at whatever it was, 5:30 or something. And all that was on my mind was, you know, oh, shall I take some wine back to the hotel room, or shall I try and find someone who wants to, you know, come out with me or whatever. And it was like such a pressure. The goddamn drinking was such a pressure. It's just incredible to be freed up from that. What a freedom. Absolutely amazing. So it was a really, really great 4 days. I was redoing my training as a practitioner in emotional neural freedom technique, EFT, and something called matrix re-imprinting, which sounds fabulously kooky. It is, actually. It's absolutely amazing, wonderful therapeutic technique. And I have been using it in my coaching over the last few years, but nothing like as much as I'll use it now, because I really, really now finally have got the final bits of the picture, and it works beautifully with family constellations, which of course is the new work that I've been doing. So so I had a really good week before I managed to come down with this really annoying cold. It's been a really interesting week as well within the Sober Club. There's been so many people have kind of had these, I think best way to describe it is light bulb moments, you know, a little bit like my remembering it, just how the freedom that I'm feeling, just amazing little light bulb moments, sometimes really tiny things, when you just start to notice the joy of little things. Just little things can make a really big difference when you're not kind of poisoning yourself the whole time. It really is, you know, freedom. That's the word, isn't it? Really is freedom to be out of this trap. I've got a great guest this week. I've been really looking forward to bringing you this interview, because I did it a little while ago with Veronica Valley. The new book is called Soberful: Uncover a Sustainable, Fulfilling Life Free of Alcohol. And Veronica is based in the US, and she works with people all over the world through her innovative online recovery program. She developed the Soberful program a good long time ago. In fact, that's the really amazing thing about Veronica. I couldn't believe it. She's been consciously sober, as she puts it, and continuously sober since 2000. Wow. Goodness me, isn't that incredible? I just love chatting to people who've been sober for so many years, and it's still just of prime importance in their life. Why would it not be? It just underpins everything. I must just warn you that the interview, and I hadn't realised till we edited it, there's some really annoying crackles on the line, and I do apologise. We've tried to kind of reduce it a little bit, but it will be a bit annoying until you can kind of get used to it. I think it must have been a dodgy lead or something, perhaps Veronica's headphones, I'm not sure. But I just really wanted to bring you this interview today, so I hope it won't spoil your enjoyment of what she has to say. But just be aware if you're thinking, what is that annoying little tapping noise? It is really frustrating. Sometimes it's a lead or a headphone connection, but you don't really realise it until afterwards. So apologies for that. Just before we get into the interview, just a reminder that I've got a whole bunch of events coming up. If you want to meet people in person, if you want to actually connect with like-minded people, it does make such a massive difference. You know that, I'm sure. It really is worth the effort. We did a family constellations workshop last week, and it was just amazing. You know, people came down from Edinburgh and all over the place. And yes, it is an effort. Of course it is. You've got to travel and book an Airbnb or whatever. But the connection that you make, the way your life transforms afterward, that kind of thing is just incredible. So do have a think about it. If you're interested in any of our events, just go to thesoberclub.com, click on events. We have March the 6th. There's a unique, very, very tiny little event in Hertfordshire, which is going to be a sound bath and meditation, open to anyone, but very, very tiny numbers. So have a look for that. And then actually February 12th, we were meant to be doing a Sober by the Sea. Not sure if that's going ahead, but drop me a message if you are interested in that, because it's next week. And then end of February 26th, Champneys at Springs in Leicestershire. So I get a little bit out of Hertfordshire. Springs in Leicestershire for our Champneys retreat. And then March 27th is our next Family Constellations workshop. Do have a think about this. Do look on to have a look at the page that we've got some testimonials on, because you know, if you're new to it all, which most people are, it's still a bit of a well-kept secret, then it could be something that you just absolutely love. It doesn't matter what stage you're at in terms of sobriety. You can be still drinking. It doesn't matter. It's not about that. It's about the everything else, really. And it's been described as a spa day for the soul, because you really leave so much more open-hearted. It really is incredible. Some of the work that I've been doing on my course the last few days has really, really reminded me how all of us have got so many little traumas. You know, we talk about trauma, don't we? The trauma with the big T, which of course is huge and will impact on your life. But there are also, in addition to that, thousands potentially of these little traumas, and they can start off as something so small that wasn't intentional. You know, it could have literally been something a parent said to you, something a teacher said to you. But if it's in those early formative years, it's what we hear as a child and what we make it mean, and then how we create, obviously unconsciously, that limiting belief that shapes us. You know, the limiting beliefs of I'm not worthwhile, I'm not good enough, I don't have any willpower, whatever it might be. And then we find ourselves, you know, when we get stressed, of course we're going to reach for a drink or whatever it might be, because that's the quickest, easiest way, right? So it does take a bit of effort. Once you've ditched the booze, you know, just so you know, you've got lots to look forward to unwrapping all the other little layers. But the good news is you feel so much more resilient by then, so much more resilient. Anyways, if you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you can find details of all of those things, or you can always drop me a message. You know where to find me on social media. I absolutely love hosting workshops and retreats and doing the coaching stuff, because the difference it makes is just amazing when people have these massive kind of shifts. It's just so incredibly powerful. So bear in mind what I said about the annoying little tapping. Huge apologies, but enjoy the interview.
My guest is Veronica Valley. You might have heard me on Veronica's podcast, and now I get to return the favor. Veronica is a psychotherapist and sober coach and creator of the Soberful program, and now the book. Welcome, Veronica. So lovely to chat to you again.
Thank you, Jane. Yeah, it's lovely to see you. Thank you for being here. I know that lots of our American listeners really enjoyed having you on and some of the stuff that you brought up.
Oh, so good. Fantastic. So, yeah, so you're usually based in the States, but you've managed to make it back to the UK. That's impressive, eh?
God, let me tell you, it's not for the faint-hearted.
No, I can imagine.
the hoops you have to jump through, and all, you know, yeah. But it's been, you know, over 2 years, and I've got to see my family. Got to see my mum. So it's nice to be home. Although I had forgotten how dark it is.
I know.
There's like no daylight.
In the last couple of weeks, it's seriously been like that. It's been dark about 11 o'clock some days. I swear to God, in the morning. Oh my goodness. Anyways, so very exciting that your book is come to fruition and it's finally out. Before we dig into that, then just tell us a bit about your background for anyone who doesn't know your work. I mean, I'm just mega impressed and bowing at your feet that you're, is it 21 years sober? Is it 21?
Yeah.
Wow.
It'll be 22 years in May. So I got sober when I was 27, wow. Which is, you know, was relatively young, really. But I was absolutely done. I wouldn't live this long. I wouldn't have got to this age if I'd have carried on drinking. I was a binge drinker, you know, being a young woman, putting yourself in just dangerous situations. And I don't think my body could have handled, you know, what I was drinking. And so I got sober and, you know, had no clue about what to do with my life. And like many people started to do some training and became a therapist. And I've just loved this work. You know, not only did I get sober, it gave me my career. And I've always worked in addiction now for almost 20 years. And I just love it. I love the people, I just love the people who struggle with addiction, because underneath that, I think we're really extraordinary. Mm. So I worked as a psychotherapist in the UK in rehab, and I had a practice in Harley Street. And then I met an American and moved to the States about 11 years ago. And then I did everything online, really, as a coach. And I've written a couple of books, and I've got this new book coming out and a podcast and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, I have a, you know, like you probably, or people all over the world, it doesn't really matter where we are. Mm. The struggle is very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to ask you a bit about being a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm quite interested in, well, certainly, you know, I'd be interested in your view as to services and how they differ in the States and in the UK. I mean, in the UK, as you probably know, if someone kind of rocks up to a GP, I'm sure we had this conversation when I was on your podcast, because I feel like I'm always talking about it. But, you know, let's say a woman rocks up to the GP with menopausal symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, they won't even be asked about their drinking, right? You know, we know that.
Yeah.
So we know there's a big cognitive dissonance going on. We know there's an issue there with medical services. Yeah. But what about if someone rocks up to a GP and it's obvious that they need to be referred on to a psychotherapist, for example? If someone's in that setting, if they're lucky enough to actually physically get any help, which I'm hearing that at the moment, you know, waiting lists are unbelievable, but let's assume they've managed to get some help. Would a psychotherapist, you know, where would a psychotherapist typically involve the concept of how much the person's drinking or not?
So there is definitely a big difference between the USA and the UK. I think the USA is generally further ahead, and there's several differences. So the first thing is, I feel in the UK, abstinence is still seen as something extreme. Like, that's only for people who, you know, have been homeless and, you know, addicted for years and are drinking around the clock, not people who look like you and me, Jenny. So I think in the UK, we tend to do a lot more harm minimization and, you know, trying to control your drinking. Mm. Whereas in America, abstinence is very, very accepted. And I would say in America, they need to probably do a little bit more of harm minimization, especially around drug use. So there's that difference. But there's also, I think, I always say the difference between two countries is, if I went to a dinner party in America, let's say in New York, and someone offered me a glass of wine, and I said, oh, no, thanks, I'm sober, or no, thanks, I'm in AA, they would just go, oh, right, no problem. Whereas if I did that at a dinner party in London, people would be like, what? Like, I just sort of said to them I had an STD or something. Mm-hmm. They'd still be like what? Like, they wouldn't know what to do with it. So I think, it differs on in how much money you have and where you live. But I think it's quite accepted in America that if you have an addiction problem, you would go to rehab. Whereas I think in England, it's still quite hard, especially to get any public funding for that. I mean, if you could pay privately, that's one thing. But so I think abstinence and a sort of acceptance that alcohol is a problem that can be, an alcohol problem can be treated and people can be okay at the end of it. I think that there's a lot more acceptance of that in the USA. And yeah, lots of, I mean, like, there's lots of therapists that, you know, it's a specialism. You have to go and see a therapist who understands addiction, because psychotherapists can also give very bad advice, just like doctors can, about drinking if they're not informed.
Sure.
So, but I think I just think there's more opportunity to get help in the US than there is at the UK at the moment.
Mm, that's interesting. So tell us a bit about, you know, the work that you do then, and how you kind of, you know, what kind of people do you work with typically? What do you find?
Yeah, well, my client group, you know, looks just like you. You know, that's who finds me, is women who on the outside, and I know we had this conversation on my podcast, and we, you know, women on the outside where everything looks like it's fine, you know, nice career, family, got the house, going on a nice holiday, because the alcohol problem is showing up internally. And it shows up internally long before it shows up externally. And by that, I mean, you know, getting a DUI and falling over drunk and missing work. You know, that's the external stuff. It's the internal stuff. It's how we feel about ourselves. It's the obsession. It's the self-loathing. It's the depression and the anxiety. All of that, you know, we can mask that. So that's very much the women that I struggle with, who on the outside wouldn't necessarily look like they have a problem with alcohol. So and they've usually been trying to stop and start for some time, wrestling with it, you know, trying to find. I feel like we would do this right. We just I was trying to find the combination that if I did it this way, I could drink, have all the fun, and none of the consequences.
Yeah.
And I just thought if I tried hard enough, I could figure that out.
It's
somehow
funny you say that. I literally had a client literally this morning, and the kind of opening line was, I just want to be able to drink sensibly. And I thought, oh, wow, let's unpack that word. How can I ever be sensible to drink alcohol? How can that ever be seen as sensible? But that's the culture we live in, isn't it? Where, you know, that's how people start out. If only I could be like normal people and drink normally. You know, there is no normal because it's poison, right? Do you think that message is starting to get out there a little bit more?
You know, it's very interesting. I got sober in 2000 before the internet was even a thing, and it was still very much a secret. Like, it wasn't something I would really necessarily talk about, and definitely not in public. But over the years, that has changed. And I was quite public about my problem and my recovery from, you know, maybe 17 years ago, because I felt I really like to challenge the stereotype. Because I didn't look like somebody who had recovered from an alcohol problem, and I wanted to challenge that. So I think it is beginning to change. And it's more, you know, the more people like you and all these podcasts and books, it's all to the good, you know, that people see, like, and also see, you know, our message, my message is very much like having, you know, it's not that alcohol's really bad for you and you have to stop. It's that actually sobriety is freaking amazing.
Exactly. And the positive spin is just the best, isn't it?
Yeah. So, hopefully this is it. I want to see it keep moving in this direction. I want not drinking to be normalized in the same way that being gluten-free is, you know?
Or vegan or whatever,
And you can go anywhere, right, and be gluten-free and vegan, and you'd be catered for. You would be able to order food, you know, people could buy something in the supermarket for you. It's not a big deal, and people are very accepting of that. So nobody would come up to you and go, oh, Janie, go and have a bread roll.
Exactly.
It's just Friday. just have one.
Yeah.
But if you're alcohol-free, people still think that you have two heads. And I really want to create a world for my kids where not drinking is just like being vegetarian or gluten-free. Something that people do. And people also understand that there's cost to drinking, because I don't think people understand that either.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll come back to that in a moment. You know that, because I'm always banging on about it, but my sort of mantra of keep the ritual, change the ingredients, because we do still want to sit and have a drink with a partner or a friend, or we want to go out, we want something nice, we don't necessarily want a cup of tea or a Coke. And fortunately, that's helping to change. Certainly here in the UK, we have the most massive variety of alcohol-free drinks. You must have noticed it. But for you, all those years ago, there was probably absolutely bugger all around. It must have been really tough.
You know, it's really interesting because I only just realized last year how complacent I was because I was completely used to not being catered for. I mean, I've been to many events where I've been given tap water because there
It's
was.
just incredible, isn't it? I mean,
I know.
if you were a major celeb, what are you going to invite, Elton John and Kim Kardashian to an event and give
Yeah.
them tap water? It's nonsense.
I know, and or Diet Coke, whatever. And I was really used to that. And then I went to a sober event last year, and there was a sober bartender, and he was mi mixing mocktails, and he completely opened my eyes, where I realized, because I would hear my community talk about all these non-alcoholic drinks, and I never bothered with them because I just was so. I will say, in my experience, if you are someone who's getting sober, I think that you have to approach the non-alcoholic wine and beer with caution because it is triggering for some people. So it's not, for some people it works as a nice alternative. For other people, they've relapsed because their brain is going, where's the buzz? Where's the buzz? So I think it's fantastic. I think approach with caution in your first 6 or 12 months. But I'm really enjoying some of the non-alcoholic options that I've now opened my eyes to because I'm like, finally, after 20 years, someone is catering for me. And my friend Chris always says, whenever you go out, always ask for non-alcoholic wine because then you create a market when you ask for it, And I have a lot of friends who drink, who they're like, I don't want to drink every night I go out, and
Yeah,
I
exactly. You want
sometimes I
some
just want to
choice.
have. Yeah, I want maybe just one glass and then I want something non-alcoholic. So it's great for everybody and it's a fast-growing market as well.
Yeah, is it really changing in the States now? Because I had a for a long time there were sober club members who would say, "Oh, you're so lucky over there. You've got all these brands, and we're behind in the States." And I don't know if you're catching. I mean, with kombucha, you've been ahead of us for years, but are you catching up in the bars and the availability of a lot of alcohol-free drinks, do you think?
Yeah, again, I mean, it sort of depends where you are. So, if you're in New York City or LA, yes. The other thing is in America, if you go to what we call a pub, they'll mix a cocktail for
Yeah,
you.
sure.
So they don't do that in pubs in England. So one of my favorite is in Virgin Mojito. So I will often have that, and you can order that. I can order that anywhere, any pub or bar in America, pretty much.
Yeah, that's great.
So there's always that. So I always try and get like a nice non-alcoholic cocktail. But we're getting there. But it just depends on where you are, really.
Yeah, sure. So tell us a little bit about what's in the book. I know you talk about emotional sobriety.
So this is kind of my thing, is that there's more to stopping drinking than just stopping drinking. That a lot of the reasons that we drink is we have defaulted to alcohol to just deal with our emotions. So it's stressful day, hard week, argument with our partner, feeling uncomfortable, lonely, whatever it is, alcohol is the answer to that. So when we stop drinking and we don't have that numbing agent, we are left with lots of feelings and emotions that can be quite tricky at first to deal with because what's happened is we haven't been able to just develop the life skills to deal with the emotional experiences of being human.
Well, certainly if we started drinking when we were a teenager or something, we really haven't had any of the kind of big life stuff other than within the in the haze of booze.
And it's lots of people say that we're really like emotional teenagers when we get sober. We're very raw, we're very sensitive. We don't, dealing with other people, like dealing with other people is it takes skills. So emotional sobriety is really, I describe it's where we want to get to. We continue to do this work on ourselves for the rest of our lives, but there is a destination. And the destination is that we want to feel comfortable in our own skins. And we want to have appropriate emotional responses to events. So we want to, I want to like myself. I want to like who I am. And I want to behave in ways and say things that mean when I go to bed tonight, I like myself. And having appropriate emotional responses to events is, I used to be the kind of person that if I said hello to you and you said, right back to me, I'd spend all day thinking, well, Jane, what have I done to upset Janie? Oh my God. I'd have really, I was so self-obsessed and insecure. So we want to just have balanced emotional, you know, if something happens that makes us angry, it's appropriate to feel angry. Mm. But it's not appropriate to be owned by that anger for weeks or months or whatever. So learning that, it's skills. It's simply skills that we don't have. And for me, it all starts with boundaries.
How
to have boundaries to keep the good in and the bad out. And that was just something I didn't know how to do.
No, me either. I had a conversation with Catherine Gray, author of Unexpected Joy of Being Sober About Boundaries. And it was very funny because I admitted that, you know, if someone set a boundary with me, as it were, you know, I would just think they hated me. Even if it was just simply that they'd said, well, no, actually, I can't meet after that time. That time is that when I don't work at that time. And I would just immediately assume, wow, how selfish that person is. It's obviously just that they hate me. I had no concept of what healthy boundaries were.
And that's an inappropriate emotional response to that event. And whereas I really appreciate frankness, I'm quite happy with a no. If you say, no, I can't do that, that's great, because then I know where I stand. And then I can be like, oh, plan B or, you know, whatever. So, just having boundaries will transform your life, your life. And that's what the book is about. It's a therapeutic program. It is like, what is this stuff that we need to do? And it start, you know, having boundaries, all of that kind of stuff. And that's what emotional sobriety is. And here's the thing. Everybody has to work on themselves. Everybody has to do personal development. Everyone in the world. But most people don't realize this. And we are fortunate that we have had this kind of call that to get sober, it's been presented to us that we also need to do this. And I think you probably discovered as well, it's extremely rewarding.
It is. And it's interesting as well, isn't it, that, you know, you talk about this, balance kind of underpins what you're talking about as well, doesn't it? That sense of being in balance rather than completely overreacting all the time as well. But what's interesting is it's hard to describe the nuances of all of that to somebody who's still drinking. I know that I had no concept of what it even was when I was drinking. I had no concept of it. It just seemed to me, it was just really that thing of, well, I wish I could just drink normally, or I wish I could, you know, be like that person who, you know, I had a friend who just seemed content, just completely content. And you have no concept of that until you're able to be in that place. So you have to try and inspire people to something that they don't yet understand how it's going to feel.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we do judge other people by their outsides, what they show on their outside. And I bet there was lots of people who would look at you and think, Janie Lee Grace.
No, 100%. Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, completely.
She looks really happy, great life. But inside, we know it was completely different. So what's going on the outside, what's going on the inside are often very different things. And that's what emotional sobriety is. It's trying to get those things to into alignment. So our insides and our outsides match.
Yeah.
We don't have this kind of hidden secret life, because it's not something we can realize on day one. It's a gradual awakening.
Absolutely.
To all of this stuff. Because I think lots of people, I definitely come across lots of people just think, I just got to stop drinking. Stop drinking. That's the problem. Everything will be fine. And then they stop. And then a few months down the line, they don't understand why they don't feel happy or, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It is a gradual awakening, sobriety.
And I guess it's a case of, you know, you stop drinking and that's when the real work starts, actually. But the good news is it's pleasurable. The good news is you're going in the right direction, right? What are your tips for that sustainability then in sobriety? Because, you know, there are many people that can stop, and I'm sure, you know, well, certainly I've stopped many times, you know, before I stopped properly, but just went back to it again. So what about this sustainability piece?
So that's really important. And I always look at an alcohol problem like a seesaw. One end is drinking and one end is sobriety. And to get sober, we have to put weight on the sober end. Because if we keep doing that, gravity will eventually take over and it embeds itself in the earth. Now, I hear people say a lot like, I tried everything. I keep quitting. I've tried, you know, I've done this program. I bought that program. I've done this. And I'm going to say probably what they haven't tried is consistency.
Yeah.
And that's really all it is we consistently have to put weight on the sober end in the same way that we understand we have to consistently exercise. Yeah. I could, you know, in my 30s, I could run 10K. Well, I could, and it doesn't mean anything. What? 15 years ago. So now I get on my Peloton and do weights and that kind of stuff because I know I have to consistently exercise, particularly as I age. So sobriety is the same thing. We consistently have to do things that support our sobriety. So that would be connection with our sober communities, whatever they are. It would be self-reflection. Yeah. That's probably one of the key pieces is looking at ourselves. Why do I feel like that? Why do I behave like that? Revealing ourselves to ourselves. So it's the community, it's the self-reflection, and it's the growth. Mm. It's the wonderful gift we get when we get sober is we really grow as human beings. And that's enriching. It's also a bit scary, but it's what we're here to do. So that's all putting weight on the sober end. So we have to consistently keep doing stuff, like whether you journal or whether you do a 12-step program or whether you go on retreats or whether you go to meetings every week or whatever. It doesn't really matter what it is. It's the consistency part that is key.
Mm. Where does your work fit in with 12-step recovery programs?
So I got sober through the 12 steps because 22 years ago, that's all there was. There wasn't anything else. The internet wasn't even really a thing. And the 12 steps are just ancient spiritual wisdom. That's all they are. They're spiritual tools that if we apply them, they change us. So I am a big supporter of the 12 steps, but I've always been a big proponent that we need lots of different options. So my program, the Soberful program, which is the five pillars of sobriety, it's a therapeutic program. So it fits with whatever else you're doing. It stands on its own, or if you're in the 12 steps, or if you're in Women for Sobriety, or whatever you're in, it fits alongside any of those programs. It's written by a therapist. It's therapeutic work, and I want to get out in a way that hopefully helped people understand it and can apply it to their own lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of, and this is a ridiculous question, but it's one that I'm quite often asked, and that is, how long does it take? You know, people will say to me, oh, I've heard, you know, other members of the sober club saying that they, you know, they're a few weeks in and they're feeling fantastic, but I'm 4 months in and I'm still not sleeping well and I'm really not feeling great. And I'm, but you know, and they do believe they are putting the weight on the end, as it were, as you say, putting the weight on the sobriety. But I guess the fact is, it is different for us all because there are so many different layers to all of this. There's obviously all the physical stuff that some of us have going on. And of course, we know that alcohol may have been masking symptoms that we may have had or may bring forth something else. But then obviously the whole emotional piece as well. So what would you say?
So that's a very, I asked that question as well. And I want to say, I feel for most people, it takes about a year for all of the physical stuff to settle down. We have to remember, alcohol is highly toxic to our bodies, highly toxic. And it's not a week or two being off alcohol. You know, dry January isn't enough to sort that out. It takes, I think, up to a year for sleep and metabolism and our brain chemistry to begin to sort of get back to its default positions. And it's like I said, when we never get done with this work, and we do it because I do this, you know, I've been doing this for 2 decades because I get good stuff. You know, I want to get all the good stuff. But there is a destination. If you work a program, the destination that you want to get to is that where you get into a place where you feel comfortable in your own skin and you have appropriate emotional responses to events. That is a destination that you can get to. Mm. And that is different for everyone. And it's really dependent on how much you focus on consistently doing the work and not dipping in and out, like bit of this and a little bit of that. It's choose a program, any program, and just commit to it and consistently do it. And I promise you, you'll receive the benefits from that and get to this place that I'm describing.
Mm. The other thing that quite a lot of people will say is, They're actually nervous about even taking this step because they know the stuff they're going to have to look at. And that's a tough one because it's true, right? But as you say, we're all going to end up having to do personal development work. It's going to come at us one way or another, right?
Yeah, and that's, yeah, that I think that's very true. And I think all of us spend some time avoiding the things that are uncomfortable and painful that we don't want to look at. And we just come to a certain point where we either decide to continue like that, knowing that we're really going to have a 50% life, or we take this leap that's really scary that lots of other people have done and can support us with, in the belief that we can actually have an 100% life. And, and for me, that's what did it. It's like, someone said to me, like, fast forward to the end of your days and look back to where you are now. Is this what you want the next few decades to be about? And I was like, no. Like, you know, time is finite. Who knows how long we have? And I really, really want to live to the full capability that I'm capable of. And that's what I wish for other people. So I want to say it's scary. No getting away from that. But we can. But that's why we have communities. And there's nothing special and different about me or you. Nothing. We just showed up and consistently did the work. So it works for everybody if we do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a good point. I years ago, I interviewed Bronnie Ware, who wrote that book, The Top 10 or Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. I forget the exact title. She was a palliative care nurse. I mean, just fascinating work she does. But, you know, the people that she spoke to, those top five regrets of the dying, no one says, oh, I wish I'd drunk more, you know, or, oh, I wish I'd not bothered taking any risks. You know, the stuff that matters at that point, you know, if you've got an opportunity, if your eyes have been opened, like, why would you not take that opportunity?
It's about being fully present in our own lives. That's one of the things that I say is don't miss your life.
Yes, exactly.
Don't miss your life.
Don't miss it. Dead right.
There's alcohol takes up too much bandwidth. Yeah. And when we get that bandwidth back, it's magic.
Yeah, absolutely. It steals your joy, doesn't it? Definitely. It's great to chat to you, Veronica. And, you know, you're just doing such amazing work. And it's just brilliant, isn't it, that it's still a thing, that 21 years sober and it's still such a thing. And I often say this, I look at, you know, Marion Keyes is just, I think she's 22 years or something, isn't she, the author? And Anthony Hopkins did that piece a little while ago saying he was, what is it, 37 years, 42 or something like that. And Elton John talks about how he doesn't celebrate birthdays anymore, really. He celebrates his soberversaries. And it's just incredible. Do you think it would be such a thing for you if it weren't the work you were doing?
You know, I wonder that sometimes. But I think what all those people you've described, I don't know, what I have is the gratitude.
It's
I'm crystal clear that my life, not perfect, but it's full, and I have all the things I wanted, like a family and a career, all that kind of stuff. I know that that all came from me being sober, and I'm 100% certain that my life is better and more sparkly because of it. So it's that gratitude, and also it's just being with other sober people and seeing people, other people recover. Like, that has never got old for me. I love it. I, you know, see people on day one and then day 100 and then a year and then 5 years, and it never ceases to amaze me how extraordinary.
I know, it's so true, isn't it? It is so true, because again, people often worry that their friendships will fall away and that they won't, you know, have the same friendships if they do this. But actually what tends to happen is the ones that aren't growing with you will fall away. But then look at the person you become and the amazing people you meet along the way who've been through the same stuff. Yeah, incredible. Anyways, just remind us where we can find your work. Then just remind us the I don't know when the book comes out. Is it out now? Is it out in January?
It comes out in America at January 25th, but I don't think it's available in the UK till like the third week of February.
Okay. All right.
And you can find it on Amazon and Waterstones and all the places that sell books. And you can find me at soberful.com, and I have a Facebook group called Soberful, And you can just put my name in, Veronica Valley, and I should come up with all the different things that I do.
Excellent. Well, wish you a good trip back to the States. And thanks so much for being my guest, and huge success with the book. And I'm sure it will do really, really well. Really appreciate it, Veronica. Thank you.
Veronica's book, Soberful, Uncover a Sustainable, Fulfilling Life Free of Alcohol. I'll make sure I put that in our show notes. Just another reminder then, go to the soberclub.com for the events page if you're interested in events. And obviously, if you'd like to join us in the Sober Club, I can't think of anything better than welcoming you, whatever stage you're at. It's really important to stress that. I still get emails and messages from people saying, oh, well, I'm quite interested in coming to an event, or I'm interested in, you know, maybe thinking about the Sober Club, but I haven't stopped drinking yet. Okay, that's cool. That's absolutely cool. The fact that you're aware, you're awake is enough. It's absolutely perfect. If you are into your week six or whatever, because you started just after Christmas, you did Dry January, fantastic. Keep going. I love that idea of stay dry till July, because you know what? You're not going to look back after that, are you? Particularly if you focus on everything you're gaining. And as you know, I always say, you're gaining everything. You have nothing to lose, nothing at all. And when we really grasp that, oh my goodness, the difference it makes, is just incredible. When we grasp that we're not giving up anything, just focus on all the good stuff that we can welcome into our lives. If you're at that stage, if you haven't already, write yourself a big list of the benefits you've found so far. There might not be that many, because it's tough in the early weeks. You know, everything's recalibrating, isn't it? And you don't necessarily have great sleep or fabulously shiny hair or clear skin. It doesn't always happen straight away, but note down the benefits that you will have found, because there will be some for sure. And then maybe do a list of at least 20 things that you're looking forward to, 20 things that you're curious about. Wow, I wonder whether, you know, when I'm sober for 6 months, I wonder if this will happen. I wonder if I'll feel this way. I wonder how I'll look. Just start to become excited about how great it's going to be. Focus all your attention there. And bear in mind, by the way, you have time on your hands. Lots of Sober Club members have said this to me. It's like, oh my goodness, you know, what do I do now then? I used to just kind of come home from work and drink, basically. So great opportunity to just, again, become curious about what you want to add in. What can you add into your life that makes you feel good, that makes time go quickly? Just become a little bit aware of what that might be. Anyways, I'll go and get some tissues and I'll see you same time next week. You know where to find me, at Jenny Lee Grace. The book is Happy, Healthy, Sober. Everything is at thesoberclub.com. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.